professors, etc., from universities, etc., to step forward like you, you know, like what you are doing. You know, I mean, it wasn't until people stepped forward talking about, you know, the geoengineering, and actual scientist whistleblowers stepped forward that anybody put any credence on it at all. We were just lambasted by the mainstream media. But what you are doing is quite incredible, coming on such a show as mine and many, many other shows, and getting the truth of the danger of EMFs out there is really, are you going to lead this?
Well, I mean, to begin with, I have to confess that the personal cost for me has been just too big, actually. You know, it's really been hurting myself and my family and my loved ones, you know. And therefore, I think it's very important that if we should have this kind of mental fire brigade, to which I count you, for instance, journalists, reporters, but also scientists, and writers, etc., and they come up with knowledge, and that should be used in a constructive way.
Yes.
But instead, scientists trying to talk about the facts that are around, they are threatened, ridiculed, harassed, and so on. And if we move to the ordinary fire brigade, if they turn up in your street and it turns out to be a false alarm, people are happy. They are happy because their home didn't burn down. They are happy because the fire brigade didn't hurt themselves or damaged their equipment. But when we move back to the mental fire brigade, we are spat at instead, you know. And I think that needs to be changed if society should have scientists and investigators and digging journalists and so on. They must be protected. They must have their gear at the very best quality and always be protected. There should be enough resources, and even if they are wrong, we should be happy.
Yes.
I mean, I would be extremely happy if I am wrong. That is actually what I want the end of the story to be.
Yes, I mean, that is the human side of it, the humane side of it even.
Yeah, exactly. That's the humane. And I would say the only way to discuss these matters in any form of democracy. But of course, today we don't have any democracies any longer. And we instead have huge profit-based and money-driven institutions that we call parliaments, governments, countries, and so on. And they are maybe from an economical point of view very effective, but from a health and environmental point of view, they are destructive.
This
is not rocket science. I mean, this is very, very simple and basic facts. And people, they do write and talk about that. And it kind of goes back, as you remember, to Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, and so on. Mm-hmm. People realize that the impact on nature, environment, but also on mankind as such, could be deleterious just from all these nice and funny things we have, like cars and mobile phones and nanotechnology and GMO and so on.
Yes,
it looks so good, but it turns out that there are side effects that are very, very destructive.
Absolutely. I mean, and also... us journalists, for example, I suppose I could call myself one now after 3 years of doing radio shows.
Well, you should.
I'm actually just a performing poet who has a radio show. It's quite strange, but it's been a wonderful experience and talking to fantastic people like yourself. We need you guys. We need people with, you know, PhDs. We need people with proper researched credentials, if you like, who will be brave enough to step forward. Now, I know you say it's damaging. I mean, I met Dr. Andrew Wakefield when he was talking about vaccinations.
Terrible situation.
Absolutely.
He got his life completely ruined, and it turned out he was right.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. He was here in Dublin about 3-4 years ago. And I met him there, and we were talking.
Yeah. And that was still before William Thompson, this whistleblower, came forward and said that the Center for Disease Control actually had known exactly the facts, but they had turned a blind eye to it, and instead they destroyed Andrew Wakefield's career and life.
Absolutely.
And 15 years later on, it turned out that he was right.
Yes, yes. And we need
But to... I mean, that's not the way we can have it, because I see here, for instance, at the Karolinska Institute, that people are nowadays so afraid of sticking their neck out, so they just don't do it. And for mankind as a whole, that could mean that the people that quickly and early realize something, they don't dare to talk about it. And instead, they have to creep back, creep away, turn their back upon it, and the cost for mankind could be too large, you know. I mean, it could be a huge mistake.
Absolutely. And we find
and it's just based on fear. And you said that you need us, but we also need you, in the sense that the scientists need to be informed about the human needs.
Yes.
Very much of our society today is based on greed instead of need. And I think that also has to be quickly changed, because otherwise we will face a lot of huge problems. And actually, probably we will still, I'm thinking about global warming and environmental effects of various toxins, etc. That is already happening now. But we need to learn from these very harsh lessons. And I mean, we just cannot count on in the future that there will be a new Sean making radio programs, a new Ulla doing science and so on, if we don't allow them.
Yeah.
And sponsor them and protect them. I think that's very, very important. And for me, having read through this hurricane the last 3-4 decades, it has been awful. I don't recommend that kind of a journey, you know. But at the same time, it has also been very revealing, in the sense that it has shown the backsides of what we call democracies, and the backside of our current political and economical system. And I think we need to really discuss that. And I talked some days ago with a professor, a woman at the Stockholm Resilience Center, who is dealing with the impact of mankind on the environment and the environment on mankind.
Yes.
From various aspects. And she was very realistic. But she also said that in the very near future, within maybe 20, 30, 40 years, we will be facing issues and problems of the magnitude that we have to sit down and ask ourselves, the next type of society mankind will build, will it be a repetition, a replication of what we have now, which we didn't believe in would be fruitful? Or do we have to really sort of frown our foreheads and think deep, really deep, and ask ourselves what kind of society is sustainable, is really sustainable?
Well, I think society should cop on. Absolutely. I mean, I live here in Ireland, and you know, only that we have corporations running governments and nations rather than people, and they're certainly lost the trust of the people. I think that most people do and are aware of what's going on. And I mean, the biggest revolution is grow your own food and stop feeding the feckin' beast. You know, that's really what we're trying to do. And a lot of us are doing that. The thing is, I mean, we are still in a situation where the corporations genuinely are totally basing everything on, as you say, profit.
At the same time, it's fascinating. I've been several times in Brussels, for instance, and Strasbourg, and in Luxembourg with the European Union. And, you know, I'm really naive when it comes to many of these political issues, you know. And I remember at one meeting, I, for instance, asked the group we were discussing for a whole day the impact of wireless systems like mobile phones on all aspects of our society, including the landscape, the city architecture, the economy, the private economy, the health, medicine, biology, everything.
Yes.
And at the very end of that day, when we were just about to leave, I said, oh, sorry, I have a last question I just have to ask. And there was one of these commissioners present, and I said, please tell me, when the European Union decided and also recommended the member countries to roll out wireless systems like mobile phones, what kind of human need was supposed to be covered then. And then he laughed, and then he turned to me and said, "Well, Ole Johansson, this is probably the most intelligent question I ever heard within the European Union. And the answer is very brutal. There wasn't any need apart from greed."
Yes, absolutely.
That was the only driving force, he said, you know. People should sell all these things and make a profit. And as you say, our society is based upon that. And then I said, it must be awful, really, to be a politician or one of the civil servants at these huge political installations like in Brussels, because you have all these lobby organizations from the industry. But then he said another thing that really struck me very hard, and he said, "Well, you are right. I mean, there are a lot of lobbyists, but the only force that we inside of the European Union really are afraid of is a completely other force." "Oh, yeah? Okay. What kind of force is that?" "Well, that's the consumers."
Mm.
"The moment the consumers decides not to buy, for instance, a certain food project or technical gadget or whatever, then it's dead."
Yes. And the problem...
So the consumers don't understand, he said, their enormous power they have.
Yes, yes. Well, the people themselves don't understand the enormous power they have,
no.
You know, in every, whether it's in the political or the consumer world,
yeah.
You know, it's incredible. And Ollie, it's absolutely fantastic speaking to you, because I've been trying to get you on my show. Oh my God. 6 months or so, I think I've been trying.
Yeah, I know. But that's my fault. I've been so very occupied. I'm so sorry for that.
No. You're more than forgiven. And it's fantastic to have you here now. I mean, it's just been such a packed show. It's amazing. And thank you. Now we have here on People's Internet Radio, we have a very, very wise and clued up, listenership. And we've also got a very busy chat room. And as we've been chatting away, there's been quite a few questions popping into the chat box. Do you want to share more with me now? Because we have only got another half an hour. Or shall I ask some of those questions that are popping up in the chat room?
Yeah, you decide whatever you want to. I'm very happy to answer questions if I can.
Brilliant.
I will try my best.
Okay. And some of them, you know, if they take us off on a tangent, you know, you bring us back if you like. Okay. So don't be worrying about that. I mean, first of all, Dinny in the chat room is asking about Sweden and Agenda 21. Are you aware of Agenda 21?
Oh, yes, indeed we are. And there are a lot of discussions about that, but that's not really my field of expertise, I have to say. Of course, if there are questions around it, we can discuss it as well.
Grand. Well, really, it was just the question that are you aware of it? And also that Sweden itself is very, very quickly fast tracking, if you like, RFID chipping and going paperless.
This is extremely interesting that you bring this up, because in Sweden... they want to, as you have already understood, remove, for instance, all types of money, paper money and coins, etc. And it should be a money-free society. You should only have these plastic cards. That also have started to inoculate itself into other areas. Mm. It's going to be more and more automatic and less people and there are all the advanced discussions about, for instance, the whole infrastructure when it comes to transportation, that in the very near future, you don't have a bus driver, but you have a computer, you don't have a train driver, you have a computer, etc. Mm-hmm. And also these RFID chipping ideas are also discussed a lot. Optimistic technocrats, they want us to have some form of imprint or implant so that we can use it instead of having like a wallet with all your ID cards and bank cards, etc. You just have a barcode or an RFID chip or something. And people may be laughing at it today, but I'm sure that within maybe 5, 10, 15, 20 years, this will be a real reality. There are already full-scale experimentation around it.
There are. And look, I mean, I had a nightmare when I was a child where I was barcoded and I had a little, I actually wrote a play because of my nightmare, where we had little, valves on our necks and we were charged for the air that we breathe.
Maybe it will not be that bad, but I mean, and of course, people talking about this, inventing this, constructing, selling these things, they may have very good reasons for it, of course. But at the same time, it also opens up for a complete control of people.
Yes.
And not in the kind of dark military 1984 Orwell sense. It's just the control, which we already have. People don't realize that when they use their computer, they leave traces
yes.
that are used by commercial companies to present ads in their computer, so they should always be forced to move in different directions based on our own
Ollie, are you not underestimating people? Because I think they do know. I mean, if I go and look at a page because I'm actually genuinely looking at buying maybe a new washing machine or something.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I'm look on Facebook and suddenly I have loads of washing machine commercials.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way it works already, you know.
Yeah.
And in Stockholm there are already discussions that when you move in front of a shop, the shop should send a signal to your mobile phone so you get the latest ad for today. Come in and buy a shirt or a blouse or a suit or whatever at extra a good price.
Yes.
And the next shop will send a new signal. Come in, buy meat or bread, and the next and next and next, you know. And to me, it sounds more like a very heavy stress load. And people are always concentrating on their intelligent phones, iPhones and similar phones nowadays, and getting, receiving information and trying to sort and send this information. And a Swedish subway today, as probably you would see everywhere in the world, people look like... I hate to say it, but they look like zombies.
Yes, yes.
They do. And maybe they would revolt and say, no, we are not. But they are very concentrated. And there has been estimates here in Sweden that young men and women, they can look on their iPhone more than 200 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I want them to look at each other to ensure the future
Ollie, do you know what? I think you're absolutely right. You're dead right. But I was traveling on a train to Dublin only last week. And yes, people are there on their phones, etc. And they are on their laptops and all the rest of it. And they are definitely not communicating with each other. Which probably makes me quite an annoying person because I shout out things like, do people not talk on trains anymore? And then I start conversations, right? But I also noticed the previous generations with their books and their newspapers and their heads stuck in that and not communicating with each other while they're taking in the propaganda from the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
At least maybe
that's
some.
A good point.
Yes,
yeah.
And at least so it's been going on for ages. It really has, you know. And
that's a very good point.
Thank you. it was just so obvious to me that the zombieism started and was passed on rather than just this generation that keeps getting blamed for everything.
I agree, you know.
Yeah, and I'm nearly 50, so I'm part of the, you know, printed generation, really.
Oh, yeah, I'm too, but I'm a little bit older than you are, you know. So. Well, take next question now.
Okay, so RFID chips. Now, I want to add to that, actually, that it was about 10 years ago that there was a Californian nightclub that actually, if you got yourself RFID chipped, you could just go straight through VIP and you wouldn't have to queue up. You could go and you get your drinks and they just bill your credit card, et cetera, et cetera.
I read about that, yes.
Yeah, been planned
for it. Was that an implant or did you get like a tattoo or something? Or
no, it was an implant.
It was, okay.
It was a chip, yes.
Yeah.
A lot bigger and a lot, you know, as mobile phones have got smaller as well, Ollie, do you know?
Yeah.
It was probably...
But I mean, of course, I mean... when we talk about the nightclub, maybe it's not that important, but let's say that you faint in the street and the paramedics arrive and they could within a millisecond use some kind of external reader and see all personal details about you, including liver values, blood values, anything, you know. That would, of course, be a great asset.
Well, unless the RFID chip in the first place gives you cancer, which is being proven to do.
So, yeah, that's the point. And as you know, there are studies in particularly dogs where such cancer tumors have been found around RFID chipping in dogs for identification then. Of course, any foreign material could initiate unwanted alterations in your tissues, including cancer tumor start. Mm. So, well, more needs to be discussed, definitely.
Well, I mean, it doesn't hurt to carry a card with a chip and pin on it, does it? I mean, you don't have to stick it in your body.
No, no. And I guess, you know, we will see probably the latter much more, because as you say, to stick something into your tissues, that's really a little bit old-fashioned and too harsh and blunt. It would be much easier to use maybe like a tattoo, which is semi-invasive, or as you say, just a card that you have in your wallet or handbag or
I don't mind it. Anyway, we're already chipped, we're already watched, we're already monitored. Peaceful in the chat room, lovely name as well, isn't it? It says anyone clever enough to design a cheap manufactured 7.83 megahertz frequency frequency generator to counter all these fields.
Oh, that's also a very interesting discussion. And now we talk about one side, and you turn into the other side. And
yes,
it would be like a traditional police radio scrambler or something like that, you know. Why not? You could have something like it, and there will be counter forces probably. But at the same time, I guess mankind will face other questions in the near future. So maybe they will not have time to devote to all these technical gadgets, but rather to take care of the planet.
Sure, sure. We've got a lot of work to do, haven't we, really?
Yeah, we have. Yeah. I mean, when I read some of the very sort of dull and gray and boring reports, like from the World Wildlife Foundation, stating that more than 40% of all animal species have been wiped out the last, was it 20 years or 30 years? I don't quite remember now. It's just appalling, of course. And as you say, there are other questions to be solved.
Absolutely. Now, also, Wally in the chat room is asking about monitoring through Li-Fi.
Yeah.
And it also,
there are a number of very interesting and I would say provocative inventions in that field, and Li-Fi is then based on light instead. But as a scientist, I would be very surprised if that Li-Fi systems came out with no biological or medical side effects.
Right, right.
Very surprised.
Ollie, he actually adds, and a little bit further down, and manipulation that it can have on the biology.
Yes, of course. But I mean, you know, just by using external magnetic fields, you can manipulate your body and your brain. Mm. There are very advanced studies at my own department here, actually, where scientists could have an external magnetic field and make you believe that you suddenly have an extra arm, which could be fantastic if that extra arm is actually a prosthesis that you should move and use after having had an accident. That could be brilliant. But it's not that far away then to think that someone, somewhere, sometime could use such magnetic fields to monitor and alter the activity in your brain, and suddenly you crave for some drink or some food or some political party.
Yes.
So, again, I mean, I love reading books, and some of the big famous authors that have written about the future, and you read about these panoramas and the controls and zombicization of people, and so on, you laugh, but then suddenly you don't laugh. No. You realize that, well, we already now have the capacity to do a lot of what these writers told us 20, 30, 40 years ago. Oh,
absolutely. I mean, Aldous Huxley and, you know, the Brave New World is here, and the comfortableness of it. And
well, actually, you know, when you read some of the books, they were too mild. Yeah. The future could be much harsher than that.
Well, let's not hope we go down the Orwellian path.
But I mean, it could.
Yes.
And we have to be aware of that. And for instance, here in Stockholm at the Royal Institute of Technology, where I used to work some years ago, they do have very advanced discussions about, I don't remember exactly what they call it, technical, ethical issues.
Yes.
And especially when it comes to artificial intelligence. Uh-huh. And you probably read about this very famous physicist Stephen Hawking,
yes,
that wrote an article together with some other physicists, professors from MIT, for instance, and they really warned about the near future when it comes to artificial intelligence, and that it could produce new problems that we haven't foreseen at all.
And even though you say you're not really an expert on Agenda 21, you know, from what I've seen of it, a technocratic world in the future where there are less people and more robotic technology.
And that's exactly what Stephen Hawking and them are talking about too, you know.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, indeed.
Indeed. So,
and,
so,
and when such a gigantic physicist, you know, and such a famous brain is coming up with these warnings, then people do react and they do listen, at least for a short while.
Well, I think people
need to listen more.
I think people are listening to you, Ollie. When I put out my blog to tell people, even though I'm banned off Facebook, everybody, so if anybody could share my blogs and podcasts, that would be lovely via email groups, etc. Because I'm actually banned from Facebook from posting my show. When I did, I got a lot of feedback saying that you're fantastic, and it was really looking forward to listening to you.
Oh, I'm blushing.
Well, please blush. I mean, you know, it's important that you know that it isn't all fear. It isn't all bad, and that you've got a lot of support out here. And
I agree with you, and I always extremely impressed by sort of ordinary people. I mean,
yes,
ordinary people, they think a lot,
yes,
and they have brilliant ideas, and they have brilliant observations, and one has to understand that even a lot of Nobel Prizes, they have actually started with some lay person making an observation,
yes,
talking about it, telling someone who told another one, and suddenly a scientist somewhere starts to think,
yes,
could it be or not?
Well, a lot of people who become scientists, I'm afraid, Ollie, have been institutionalized and don't really think outside of their box.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so we need to...
I remember when I took a course in scientific leadership, and the excellent teacher said that most scientists, they ended up in what he called the safe corner, and that meant that they were devoting their time to administration,
yes,
and sort of keeping the squared box intact. And he said, you have to keep away from that safe corner. Whatever you do, never go there.
Well, he sounds like a great man saying that.
Yeah, and you know, I have the great honor and now then meet Nobel laureates. And I must say, I'm extremely impressed the way they have kept outside of the box, you know.
Yes, yes. Now, I'm not going to get through all these questions because we've only got about 10 minutes left. But Dinny, whether it's tongue or cheek or not, really wants to push the Swedish angle. And he's saying, ask about, are you going to be the first cashless society? And also, where is the biggest tetra in the world? In Sweden. So he's coming out with quite a lot of that type of stuff, and he wants me to ask you about them.
Oh, I didn't hear the first question. You said the what?
Yes. Will Sweden be the first totally cashless society?
Oh, yes, yes. I would definitely say yes to the first question.
Okay.
And we are moving very quickly to it. And I do see the practical advantages with it. And there are a lot of situations where it's better not to have cash. Cash is not the king, definitely not. But as I say, that also produces new problems regarding tracking, identification, control, etc.
Indeed,
that needs to be discussed and dealt with.
Here on People's Internet Radio, Ollie, we look for solutions, and that's what we're trying to do all the time. We're seeking solutions,
yeah.
And over the 5 years now, I've only been here 3 years, we've managed to find many solutions. And on the cash side of things, there is a system that has been ignored by American presidents in the past, or at least if they put them forward, it would be certainly the banking cartels would say, nope, we're not having that. That will take our money away. But mathematically perfected economy exists. It was designed by Mike Montagna, and we should be implementing it. It's as simple as that. So the more people who talk about it and share the information, the better. Just like the information you're giving us tonight, Ollie.
But you know, when we go back to Sweden, you know, Swedes have a lot of very good characteristics, but unfortunately we are very prone to accept any kind of technical development. Love new things.
So therefore, and you'll be the testing ground.
Yeah, when we don't really put the critical questions.
Uh-huh.
So we need help from everyone around the world too, you know. And there is an active discussion in Sweden. There is, definitely. But of course, most consumers, they do not take part in this. They are occupied with everyday life. They're going to pick up their children at the daycare center, they're
yes.
going to the school, they have to buy food, prepare dinner, etc. And they just see the advantages with the new technical development.
Yes.
I would love to see much more discussion, like in public radio, TV, and so on in Sweden, but also elsewhere. Because I was so very much struck when I visited this famous museum in Amsterdam, the Anne Frank Museum, with this Jewish girl. And then I realized that in today's society, people could never hide.
Yes.
The moment they turn on electricity in a room, a smart meter will detect it. The moment they use their credit card, some computer will detect it, and so on. So if you really want to control people, Sweden will be the ideal place for such control.
Yes, well, we at the moment we are fighting the implementation of smart meters in our country. In fact, we have a big battle going on at the moment, and that's what the...
And you know, when we talk about smart meters and these new type of light bulbs that should save energy for us, I have actually myself been pretty angry, I have to say, because
good.
I never see that I save anything on my bill. My bill is always increasing.
So
I actually phoned the 5 biggest utility companies in Sweden and asked them at their consumer desks, and they didn't understand the question even. They said, what should you have less to pay, you mean? No. It will be an increase. But I said, you go out in your advertisements and say that we should use energy-saving light bulbs and smart meters that will make it much more cheap for us to use electricity. But I don't see it.
No.
It never appears. It's just a big scam.
Yes, of course it is. And they'll put it
and
down to inflation.
And that makes me angry.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to lie to someone, and I don't want to be lied to.
Exactly.
And especially not by the companies in Sweden, because they are also, several of them, owned by the state.
Mm-hmm. No, you're dead right. Listen, Jason is asking in the chat room, Sean, can you please ask the guest this? And we've only got 5 minutes left, so this is probably going to be, unfortunately, I'm going to have to invite you back, basically, Ollie, okay?
well, you could.
It might be a few more months to get you on, of course. But
No, we have to do it quicker than, you know.
I think so. So
but you have a question about Tetra, you also said.
There was, yes, the biggest Tetra is in Sweden.
Well, I don't know if it is, because I know they have a lot of Tetra in the UK as well, but and in Sweden it's called Rakel, but it's the same system, and we have the same both technical problems as you have elsewhere, as well as the same discussion about the radiation. And I always allow myself, when I see a police officer somewhere out on the street and so on, and jump forward and ask them if they discuss the radiation from all the wireless gadgets they have on their body, in their cars, etc. And the answer is yes, they do, but they are not really allowed to discuss that, especially not by the trade unions, which to me makes my life very upside down. I thought the trade unions should be on the employee's side, you know. Yeah. So there is a sort of underground discussion about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, I'm going to ask the last question from Jason, and I'm really apologise to anyone in the chat room that hasn't got a question answered tonight, and I will ask Ollie to come back again to visit us. Jason's asking, simple one really, Sean, can you please ask the guest this? Every night in work, I use earphones plugged into a Bluetooth receiver. My phone is on a bench away from me. Should I be concerned?
Oh, very good question. The first time I really put that question to test was 1998 in Göteborg on the west coast of Sweden, where the scientists gathered for a meeting for several days around mobile phones and health. And we listened to various scientists from all over the world. They described their data. And then I asked one of the physicists if I should use any form of hands-free gadget, how far away from my body do I need to put my telephone to get under the levels where scientists see serious effects? And then he answered exactly like this. He said, well, Ole, he said, it's very hard to calculate this up from the stage here, but it would probably be enough if you put it 5 to 10 kilometers away. People don't realize that a mobile phone is a very, very strong emitter of radiation. There are few gadgets that can traverse such long distances without any problem. And people don't realize that if you put a mobile phone in standby mode on the surface of the moon, seen from planet Earth, it will be the strongest radio source in the universe.
That's amazing, isn't it? Absolutely.
Isn't it? I mean, it's just fantastic. Mm. It's just one single handheld mobile phone in standby mode. It's just waiting for a call, and still, it is so strong, you know. And then I remember I was on the Swedish radio, and I talked about this and mentioned what this physicist had said. And then there was a teacher who called me, and he was very upset and said that was the most stupid thing he had ever heard, you know. And he had calculated it, and it was enough to use 500 to 1,000 meters.
Ugh.
And I still said, you still need very long arms. And then he got so angry, so he slammed the receiver and just disappeared, you know. So, but that tells you, you know, that when the manufacturers sell you a mobile phone and they tell you to keep it at least, and I quote, at least 1 inch away from your body, which practically means that you can never touch it.
Yes.
You cannot even get it out of the box, by doing it, you will involuntarily touch it, you know. So you just cannot. But that's the way for them to legally put themselves on the safe side.
Absolutely. When in my ignorance and in my youth, when mobile phones first came on the market, I used to carry one around on my hip. Okay.
Yeah.
And it came to the stage where it was obvious in the end, because my phone would not be on my hip, it would be in another room, and my hip would vibrate before the phone rang.
Oh yeah, that's a common observation, and people talk about similar experiences. Yes.
Yeah. So listen, I've got a really, really busy hour ahead of me, Ollie, but it has been so fantastic to have you.
Well, thank you so much.
And
next time we can talk about, for instance, what ants do when they're exposed to mobile phones.
What ants do?
Ants do, but I won't tell you now. It's for the next time.
Okay, well then you've left me on tenterhook, so you have.
Cliffhanger.
Exactly. I'm hanging by my fingertips off that cliff. Ollie Johansson, thank you so much for coming on Out of the Bag.
Well, the very same to you, and I've been where you are actually several times, and I must say it's one of the most beautiful countries in the world.
I agree entirely.
Yeah, it's a dream for a Swede to go there. It's so beautiful.
And much, much cheaper, of course.
Well, I wouldn't say much cheaper.